welcome to episode 107 of the Golf Talk Podcast, brought to you by thesandtrap.com. This is Eric Barzeski. Alan Olson is where he always is.
Hello. I was at home.
Oh, you're sitting on your butt.
Or something.
Talking into a microphone.
Yeah, how fun is that?
Is that where you always are?
Pretty much. Next week, though, we'll be on location, so that'll be nice.
Nice. Amateur Danny Lee, first story in Off the Tee, wins the Johnny Walker Classic. He birdies two of the last four holes, kind of come from behind, forced some guys to make eagle on the last hole to tie him. Neither could do it. They came pretty close, both with a chip and a long putt. But Danny Lee, as an amateur, you remember he won the U.S. Amateur last year, becomes the youngest person to win on the European Tour.
Yeah, a very impressive win, and for him, it's going to raise the bar even higher, as he's already been labeled the next big thing, so we'll see what happens, but a good win for him.
Right. He's one of only three players to shoot four rounds in the 60s, 67, 68, 69, finishing with a 67. Anthony Kim shot a final round 67 to tie for 25th. There wasn't a whole lot of star power at the Johnny Walker Classic. I mean, Greg Norman was playing. You know, the list of people at the top of the leaderboard at the end of the day was not, you know, where you think it might be. It wasn't a premium European Tour event because it was in Australia. But it's still a European Tour event. It's still played against professionals, so.
Yeah, impressive victory by Danny Lee. We'll just have to see what happens. It'll be interesting to see how he does at the Masters this year.
Yeah, he strikes me as a streaky guy, perhaps a bit like Phil Mickelson. He's certainly had a decent career, so. We'll see where that takes him. Phil Mickelson's streakiness continued in his repeat championship at the L.A. Open. I have no idea what it's actually called, but it's the L.A. Open.
The Northern Trust Open.
Yeah.
Or the whatever. Nissan Open. Or something.
I think it was even something else recently, too. So, final rounds, 72. Barely gets it done for Phil Mickelson. He has a wild ride up and down. Birdies, I think, two of the last three holes. He two-putted for a birdie on the 17th, so that was at least that. But had a stretch where he had, I think, four or five straight bogeys in a row, or without any birdies in between. He eagled the first hole, then went three bogeys the rest of the front nine, two bogeys to start the back nine, and then finally pulled it back with two birdies coming in. So not the greatest. I mean, he shoots two rounds of 72, surrounded by a 63 and a near course record 62. So
I think that's what's so... There's no doubt, I mean, Phil is entertaining, but he's kind of entertaining for the same reason why some people watch NASCAR. They're waiting for the train wreck.
And it came fairly early and often on Sunday because at one point he put his driver away because it was going left, it was going right, it was going all over the place.
Yeah, and you know, I know he's been working with Butch Harmon and you know, obviously he's got something's working if he can shoot a 63 and then a 62. But when he has to fly Butch Harmon in so that they can have a practice session Saturday morning, you know, either things just aren't taking or I'm not sure. But yeah, Sunday he was spraying it around like a 15 handicap.
His short game and his putting kept him in it despite two late lip outs that really could have made it a non-issue for him to win. Of course, Steve Stricker had a good final round. Unfortunately marred by a bogey on the final hole, the 18th, after a really bad drive. Finishes one shot back. A couple others tied for third. Under Shamero, who hit a ball pretty much, I think it went out of bounds. KJ Choi with a 69. Against Stricker, finished with a 67. So, a good week for Phil Mickelson, repeating. Finally, playing some decent golf. I guess it took Ben writing an article about him in last week's Thrash Talk to get him off the out of his malaise.
Way to go, Ben.
And it's a good thing, too, that he's out of his malaise because we got word early last week that Tiger Woods would be coming back this week. In fact, by about the time you start listening to this podcast on Wednesday, Tiger Woods will probably be playing in his first match in the WGC Accenture Match Play Championship. I know I said on this very show here that I didn't expect Tiger to come back till Bay Hill or Doral. We heard he was 95%. I guess maybe he feels he's at 100 now, or 95 is good enough, which would be surprising. Or maybe it's the fact that Accenture is one of his sponsors, and he really likes WGC events. You know, there may be some other things at play here. He will be back.
And everybody at PGA headquarters and CBS breathe a huge sigh of relief. And all the sponsors.
Yeah, if he gets the CBS coverage.
That's true.
He's on Golf Channel coverage for the first 3 days. So.
You know, I mean, for him, it's a no-lose situation. You know, if he goes out and wins, it's Tiger Woods. If he loses, he's coming back. He's rehabbing. This is kind of a warm-up event before, you know, before Bay Hill and Doral and the Masters and whatnot. So for him, I mean, it's nice to see him come back. It'll be interesting to see what happens. Yeah, it will just be really interesting to see what he's been working on. And is he dominant? Is he hindered at all by the knee?
He said, too, that the final round pressure you feel in a regular tournament is almost replicated every shot and every match you play in a match play tournament. So, you know, if he thinks he's, and I doubt he thinks it, but if anybody thinks he's soft mentally or kind of wants to get that vibe back, even Phil Mickelson made comments about how he's looking forward to the match play because it's great preparation for final rounds of majors because every shot of every match is important again. So that may be part of the reason he's decided to come back a little early too. You know, he's missed out on some early season competition as well as the whole second half of last year. So mental preparedness. That'll segue nicely into our forum topic of the week, which we'll get to as soon as we come back from this message.
On a scorecard, all shots are created equal.
A stroke is a stroke.
From the first tee
to the 18th green,
there's only one piece of equipment
I use for every one of them.
My golf ball.
And in a game where just one shot can decide a championship,
the ball you play makes a difference.
And that's why there's only one ball.
There's only one ball.
One ball I'd ever play.
Performance counts. Quality counts. Every shot counts. Titleist, the number one ball in golf.
Our forum topic of the week was given to us by Stacy E. Wanted to know, how many majors will Tiger win this year? It's a poll question that you can check out in the show notes. And your choices are 0, 1, 2, 3, 4. And you can kind of read through what people have said so far. We've got a few zeros. A lot right now. The leading choice is 2. Which, looking at the setup for this year, I would probably
we have just as many zeros though as we have fours. 10.53% currently of both. 18% say 1. 5% say 2.
I think 2 is pretty accurate. I mean, you've got to give him a shot at Augusta. The U.S. Opens at Bethpage. He's the favorite there.
Yeah, it seems if you put the over under at 2.5. A lot of people would take the under, certainly the majority on the current poll. But, you know, I'm going to say 3. You know, I'm not sure the British Open will suit him. Maybe it will. With Bethpage, I think the Masters he's due. If we can believe what he said, this will be the first year he's played in his entire career pain-free. You know, he's won 13 majors with pain and working around that and maybe not swinging as best as he knows he can. And if he's figured out that he can swing and trust it and not be in pain now, look out.
Yeah, no, that's a very good point. You know, Hazeltine, he did have a finishing up runner-up last time. So I'm going to go with 2, but I could definitely see 3. I don't think Turnberry really suits him very well. And
feel free to contribute to the conversation. We'll link to the forum thread in our show notes. Vote and view forth your opinion in the comments below. And let us know why you vote for 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, or in the case of some people, 5. Don't know what that's about.
Don't spew 5.
We'll be back again.
In this game, you never hit the same shot twice.
You have to be totally prepared.
For whatever the course gives you.
I practice shots most people don't even think of.
Out here,
if you want to win, you can't take anything for granted. Especially
your golf ball.
Especially your golf ball.
Performance counts. Quality counts. Every shot counts. Titleist, the number one ball in golf.
Welcome back. This is our Beating Balls segment. The LPGA has signed a 10-year deal with the Golf Channel. It's not quite as long as the 15-year deal with the PGA Tour, but the LPGA, a 10-year deal for domestic cable broadcast rights or something. I forget, something or other. This is nice though. I mean, I like this because it's tough to find LPGA tour coverage. And now with the Golf Channel, we'll have it. You know, their weekends are a little bare. They do have Nationwide Tour. They do have Champions Tour, but they don't have the PGA Tour. So it'll be nice to be able to tune in Sunday to see LPGA tour coverage on something other than, you know, ESPN2 or something. You know, half the time it's not even on that. You know, or you have to find it, or it's tape delayed, and it may still be tape delayed, but it'll be nice to have a home for LPGA Tour coverage that's also the Golf Channel. You know where to look for it. You know who will be announcing it. Fortunately, I think the announcing team that covers LPGA Tour Golf is better than the team they sent to cover PGA Tour Golf.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is really nice. It's good. You know where the LPGA is going to be. And, you know, it offers up a good opportunity, especially on Sunday, you know, Saturday, Sunday, when, you know, maybe the PGA Tour round is boring or rained out, or you can flip during the commercials or whatever. So, yeah, it'll be nice rather than having to wait until like 8 o'clock at Sunday night to catch the tape delayed version, or like you said, look to ESPN Classic 2, 360 or something, wherever it's found. So good for them.
ESPN News.
Big Ten Network or something like that. But you know, all in all, it's good. It's good for the Golf Channel because it cuts down, hopefully, on the number of infomercials on the weekends, and you get to see some golf.
Yeah, I mean, European Tour coverage starts in the morning, so it won't interfere with that. But Nationwide Tour and Champions Tour coverage might be a bit of a pinch, so it might still get tape delayed, but at least it'll be on. Half the events on the LPGA Tour rarely seem to even get coverage at all on television, so I'll take it. And it sounds like it's good for the LPGA Tour as well. So staying with the LPGA Tour, Michelle Wee played in her first event as an LPGA member in Hawaii at the SBS Open. It's interesting to note that the first hole she ever played as a member of the LPGA Tour, she birdied. She held the lead or was around the lead most of the week and then ends up losing by three. Kind of a bit of a collapse after leading by three with eight holes to go. She ends up losing by three. Granted, Angela Stanford birdied, I think, three holes in a row, but was helped tremendously by Wee's poor putting stroke on some short putts. She ran some long putts by and three putted. She missed if it was 3 feet, then I'm 8 feet tall, putt on 16 for birdie that would have gotten her to within one at the time. A double bogey at, I think, the 11th or 12th hole. It was kind of a bad stretch there.
Yeah, definitely. There's that five hole stretch starting with 11 after dumping her tee shot into the marsh. Kind of the downfall from there, and Stanford got hot and was pulling off some birdies, and I guess it was kind of, I mean, Michelle Wee's only 19, but she's been around, which seems like forever. She hasn't won since she was 13, which just seems bizarre. I mean, she has a...
And there's something to be said for learning how to win, and maybe she didn't do that here, or maybe she just hit bad shots. You know, if Phil Mickelson doesn't hit the shots that he needs to, if you flip his round around and put all of his birdies and eagles early in his final round and put all of his bogeys late, does he stumble home and still win? Or is it the mental resolve to come back? And, you know, I mean, it's kind of the order of things, you know. If you put her birdies late and her bogeys early, did she try to come back and just fall short? Or did she give it away? It's tough to say, but, you know, she finishes second, but she doesn't win and she does kind of collapse. So there's room on the other side to find fault.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. You know, at the same time, it's their 14th top 10, you know, thus far in her career. And, you know, hopefully she can learn to start gaining some more experience and get some wins, which will help out the LPGA and the Golf Channel.
Right. And if she can putt, you know, I could easily think of three putts that she could have made. She made some good ones in the final round, but she made two, three putts, I think, on Friday. She missed some short ones again, like the birdie putt on 16. Three putts would have put her in a tie, and she could have easily avoided some three putts or made some short ones that she didn't. And so I think she'll learn that even if her game isn't where it needs to be as far as ball striking, you can get away with that a little bit if your putting is good. And perhaps putting is still the thing that she needs to work on most.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll just see what happens.
Dustin Johnson won the Pebble Beach tournament without hitting a shot in the final round. It was first pushed to Monday, then canceled. So he wins a three-round, 54-hole event. He was forced to sleep twice on the 54-hole lead and then ends up winning the tournament Monday afternoon in a parking lot or something when they call play. I don't know. They just deliver the tournament trophy to his locker, I guess, or something.
Yeah, and the big fat million-dollar check. So,
when is this event going to move? You know, this whole West Coast swing is dumb. Florida weather is okay now. California weather is crap. You know, if you flip them, if you have the Florida swing first and then the California swing, I think it makes a lot more sense. I mean, this schedule goes back to the days when, you know, the event was in Hawaii or, you know, things like that, or it didn't start till February, March instead of January. It doesn't make any sense. You know, every year, the AT&T at Pebble Beach has crappy weather half the time.
Oh, yeah. And there's always at least one event on the West Coast swing that gets cut short, or they have to spill into Monday, or...
I mean, the Nissan Open was a 36-hole tournament a couple of years ago when Adam Scott won.
Yeah.
You know, and they had to have a playoff on Monday, I think, because they had no play on Saturday and Sunday. So it's ridiculous. I think they need to look into that. You know, no shame. You know, Johnson had a pretty big lead. I think it was 3 or 4 shots. So I'd call it unlikely he was going to give it away, but... He wasn't really tested, so I don't know. It's got to kind of feel like a bit of a hollow win. I'm sure he'll take it all the same.
Yeah, switch him around, and you probably have less likely that you're going to have weather issues on either end.
That does it for episode 107 of the Golf Talk Podcast. I hope you enjoyed last week's episode 106, also known as the Pro V1 Podcast. The interview was quite in depth, so check that out. Check the show notes for links to all the stories we've talked about this week. And until next week, this is Eric Barzeski saying bye-bye.
Go spew in the forum topic of the week.